It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Let me think. Judgment. The practice was closed to the media. We're still in the preseason, technically. We're preseason, at least. We got a couple of practice squad transactions. We've got kickers. Nope. Nothing that. Sal, let's talk about your draft. Let's just start there. Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Sorry. Nothing for me.
Gosh.
Nothing for me comes in above that. How'd it go?
I went well. First draft last night. Have another one tonight with my media colleagues. It's our Buffalo media draft we do every year, and there's literally like two leagues. It's kind of a National League, American League type scenario, right? Because there's so many people who cover the Bills that, you know, we all kind of got together several years ago, and this started. And tonight's another one there. So last night went well. That's my buddies down in Florida that I've been in the league with. It's actually, I really love the backstory of this league, though, more than the league itself sometimes. I started this league in 1997, and I was in Florida this is before like internet and, you know, doing all the stuff like that. So you're doing it by hand. I'm posting it. I was a bartender at a sports bar. I'd be posting the standings and scores out of the back in the dartboard room. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it just evolved. And then years and years later, I moved to Buffalo. Obviously it was just too hard. But somebody else took over the league, and it's the same league, and it's awesome. And that's what I love about fantasy football too, Mike, is it's not just the act of playing. It's being with your friends and doing it for so long. This league now is going on. It's been, 25 years, 20. It's almost 30 years this league's been going. It's cool.
Love that. That resonates with me. I did a league that I started in 1988 in high school.
Yes.
And I know some of those guys, same. And some of them just started up a new league, or their brothers, like family, people connected to that group of friends that I'm a part of that feels good. You know, like that's something that goes back, just being so excited to draft Neil Anderson, Sal, in 1988. I mean, very few picks have I made that were better.
We have I did the same thing. I think 89 was our first year. My first year I started one, and it was called the Cleveland Hill Fantasy Football League, CHFFL. And we still make fun of one of our friends, or we did, I should say. Unfortunately, he passed on a few years ago. But he one year drafted John Settle as the first pick overall.
Oh,
I don't even remember John Settle.
Atlanta.
And we're like, yeah, and like, great, he was the first pick overall. But, you know, back then it's so funny. Like, we had kickers going to the first round because they had scored the most points, quote unquote, right? So people took him in the first round. It was kind of wild. So that was cool. Last night was great. You know, they're mostly down there. I'm remote, and I had the 8th pick overall. And thanks to you and me, you know, working it out with me, I had my choice, and I chose there because I was guaranteed to get two of a certain group of guys. And I did. I started off with Malik Nabers and Trey McBride. It's a tight end premium league, so I like the way I started.
Oh, me too. Man, that end of the first round is rich, and those are, you know, key names in that. Don't forget February Fix, Sal. You've been in that league for the whole 9 years, I believe.
I think we have my buddy Chris, who won this league. He's the only other guy in Buffalo in this league with me. He actually won it last year. He's my partner, and I have to go back and look at my team, Mike. I have no idea because it's best.
I'm looking at it right now.
Kind of set it and forget it, right?
I'm looking at it right now. You could use Nick Chubb and or Amari Cooper to have a renaissance season.
Ooh.
That would be good. But you have Ibuka. He's exciting.
I think I got good receivers in that league.
Yeah, take a look. Amuka, Jaden Reed, Sutton.
Okay.
We'll see. Let me just transition into the real football with Amari Cooper here. Like, he goes to Vegas, so quiet all offseason, never heard a word about him. Then it's a one-year, $3.5 million deal maybe with Vegas. I get this question. You would be more qualified to answer it. Is there anything left?
I thought he was okay at times last year. I just think that, you know, for a full season, I'm not sure. You'll probably get a pop-off game or two from him at some point. I mean, you know, quarterback matters here, and they had Josh Allen here. And remember, he came to Buffalo and he got hurt right away, right? He hurt his wrist, I believe it was, right away. And that kind of really set him back a little bit as well. But I think, sure, I think the way this guy prepares, I think the way that he keeps his body, he's so professional. He really is. Getting to know him a little bit for, you know, a month and a half, 2 months, whatever it was that he was in Buffalo, you know, since the trade deadline, I think he can still play in the league. You're going to get a pop-off game maybe once in a while. He's got to get the targets. But I don't know if over a 17-game season if he's going to resonate that much, especially for a team that probably isn't going to be that good.
Right. Just turned 31 in June, Amari Cooper signing with the Raiders. While we're here quickly, do you have a thought on Rasul Douglas going to Miami? Just so interesting and ironic that Douglas, who was like a playmaker last year on a team that had 32 takeaways, third in the league, they did not get one interception from him.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. He clearly was not the same player last year as he was the year before, which is weird because it's only a few months separating the offseason, right? You took 6 months later, and he just wasn't making the same kind of plays. And I think what I kind of gather about what the Bills' intention was this offseason was that they needed somebody a little bit more twitchy, a little bit more athletic. Now, look, you could say, well, wait a minute, Tre'Davious White's coming off all those injuries. I think if you think Tre'Davious White's going to be healthy enough, he is more that than Rasul Douglas at that point last year. You kind of have to figure out where they're going to be over the next, you know, several months for that. But he just wasn't the same kind of ball-breaking guy, you know, breaking on the ball, twitchiness that he was when he first showed up in Buffalo. And maybe he had a couple injuries. Remember, he did get injured late in the playoffs, you know, in the playoffs the year before that. You know, when you get older, those things start to linger a little bit. You know, was that a part of it? I'm not sure. But he was I really appreciate Rasul Douglas for his, like, the way that his relationship with the DBs. He came in as a veteran, and really him and Christian Benford have such a strong relationship. That was great. And Mike, I will tell you, like, just the behind the scenes type stuff and a peek behind the curtain, there was not a game where home games, I say mostly the home games, because away you have to leave and get on the bus. There was not a home game where Rasul Douglas wasn't one of the last guys left in the locker room and just hanging out with other guys and talking to him about, like, game and football. And I just think that matters, you know, when you have a guy like that in your locker room. So I wish him well in Miami. I just don't really know what they have on defense and how much, you know, if you're relying on Rasul Douglas to be a really big player for the Miami Dolphins, I don't know if that's going to go well.
It might be a little bit like relying on Jordan Poyer here, right, who was with the Dolphins last year. Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. So I know Tyler Bass missed much of the summer. Mm-hmm. He returned for the final preseason game. Why, other than maybe obvious reasons, would the Bills be working out kickers? Is this something they might just normally do, or is it a bad sign for Bass or his health?
You could definitely look at it as, and I wouldn't say bad sign, but concerning, like, hey, they want to really make sure that he's okay, and we don't know of anything that happened to him other than him being at practice, and he was fine from what I've seen. So I don't think there's anything there unless something happened over the last 24 hours. I don't think that's the case. So I'm going to say that that's probably not the case. It is something they normally do. And this is something, it's a great thing that this happened just a little while ago. And you could ask me about this because this is something I love to remind people of all the time. The Bills and every other team, they bring people in at different positions at various times, especially early in the year. Because if case something does happen to somebody, you have another guy in the ready that you just saw, you just worked out. You can call him right up and say, hey, we know this guy's ready to rock and roll. Let's go. It's better than something happens. You got to call a guy, get into Buffalo, see what he's all about, go through that process. If you have that dossier on him right away, you've gone through that. If something happens, you can, you know, call right upon him. And it would make sense with Tyler Bass with this injury this year. He missed some time. Hey, let's get some kickers in now. Let's just make sure. You know, we go through week one. If Tyler's not right, we might have to call on somebody. But it doesn't mean that they don't think he's not right.
Interesting. These kickers, they're not nobodies. I mean, these are guys that have kicked in the NFL. Eddie Pinheiro, Zane Gonzalez, Greg Joseph. Like, they've all had careers already. I wonder what their calculus is, Sal. Like, if the Bills could do this, a lot of teams, most teams could do the same thing. Maybe they just bounce from station to station, sort of working out. I might do it, and I probably think that I should if I'm one of these players, but I'd also think, like, I've got a resume. You know, you could look me up. I kicked in the NFL last year and did this. And if you needed somebody in November, I'm probably the same kicker. So, I mean, you know, they'll make the trip because that's the impression you want to make, and maybe they think they're trying out for a job, like, more imminently. But otherwise, you know, what are you really trying to figure out that you shouldn't know already? I guess I would put it that way.
Let me ask you this. Would you think, I'll ask you, because I keep thinking about this. Is it possible that with the new kicking rules and Tyler Bass having this recent injury that, you know, he's back from, but having to maybe kick it a little bit differently on kickoffs now and not wanting to put all that on him, that they say, let's bring in a guy. We can put him on the practice squad. We can elevate him and just have him do kickoffs. Is that a possibility, I wonder? You know,
sure.
There was a time where, and I think teams every once in a while still do this, where they have a kickoff specialist. That's kind of gone away. The Bills don't do that. But you might actually think about that now, Mike, right? Which is, hey, maybe there's a guy that is better at that particular skill than the guy we have, but our guy is still the field goal guy and the extra point guy, but maybe we want something a little different on kickoffs. I just think that could be a possibility.
Yes. I should ask you, and I should maybe know this already, but I missed the end of the week and the game. What is the latest with Bass? Like, so is it everything that was keeping him off the field behind him as far as we know? How did Saturday go? Like, is there any sort of – what's the new conclusion on him, basically, the new status?
I think the conclusion was he's fine because he made five kicks and then he missed a really short field goal. And for whatever reason, he missed that because he kicked a 39, a 37, and a 37-yarder, and he made two extra points before that. Like, the five kicks, all good kicks, went in, and then he missed a really short, like, 29 or 34-yarder. I can't remember which one it was. Maybe 34, but he missed that one, which is kind of odd. But it didn't seem like there's anything wrong with him. And he kicked off. Every time the Bills scored, he kicked off. So I don't think there's any conclusion other than Tyler Bass is fine. Then we went out to practice the other day, and he was out there, and he was kicking. If there's anything wrong with him, it would have been something that is lingering that we don't know of, or something that happened over the last 24 hours.
Have you talked to him about the kickoff rule changes?
No, and what's funny is I wanted to talk to him after the game on Saturday. Here's how it works. We can't really, in the media, we don't talk to guys who are injured. Like, it's just kind of a rule, right? You don't talk to guys who are injured. Maybe it's because the team doesn't want them to revealing anything about their injuries. But if a guy is practicing, he's fair game. You can talk to him or playing in a game. If he's injured and he's not practicing, he's not playing, he does not talk to the media. So, you know, we respect those rules and we don't do that. He kicked on Saturday. And actually, I'll say Lance Lysowski, who's now the beat reporter for the Buffalo News, who was with the Sabres. Now he's covering the Sabres, I should say. Now he's covering the Bills. Him and I both, after the game, we're looking around the locker room going, hey, where's Tyler Bass? And we both said, hey, let's go find him. And there was an extra kind of room off to the side. The locker room was a little weird in Tampa, the visitor's locker room. There was this huge locker room. Then there was another kind of auxiliary locker room off in the back. And someone said, yeah, the specialists are over there. So Lance and I both walked over there. And by the time we got there, Tyler Bass was already gone. So a long way of answering your question of not talking to him. But I wanted to explain that, like, we wanted to talk to him, but just didn't get that chance.
I'm not suggesting the Bills would want to cut him or anything. I mean, he had a good bounce back season. It's just to point out that he wouldn't be able to, you wouldn't be able to do that cheaply. Like, he has a contract through 27. There's a $6 million dead cap number if the Bills, whether it's injury related or not, like, just there's that aspect to this with him if they were even thinking about making a change there. Sal Capaccio on the West Herr hotline, a couple of practice squad moves today. Hardy was cut. Anything of consequence there? I mean, it's, again, the practice squad.
No, by the way, I'm looking at over the cap. They would save 3.6 by releasing Tyler Bass now, and it would only cost them $1 million in dead money this year and next year.
All right.
However, I have seen no indication that, like, I mean, here's what tells me that I would be stunned if they did that, Mike. Even when he was hurt for 3 weeks, they didn't bring another kicker in until late, like the last week. And then that other guy kicked, and I can't remember his name right now, Caden Davis. Like, they didn't bring Caden Davis in. Like, they had nobody kicking at practice for 2.5 weeks. So it's like, yeah, it didn't really matter, right? And then he finally did. So anyway, that's why I'd be stunned. I just wanted to get the money right on that. Daquan Hardy, I'm a little surprised because I really thought that was a guy that they felt maybe at some point could challenge for a return job who could give you more on defense than Brandon Codrington. Because I really like kind of sometimes what I see from Daquan Hardy on defense. He plays outside. He plays inside. When he was drafted, people thought he'd be only strictly a slot guy. They've used him on the outside as well, and not too bad, actually. But he did have an injury during camp, and then he came back. And, you know, if they feel they're set in the secondary, then, you know, maybe that's just a guy that they feel they need something else. Now, here it also could be just numbers because they brought in another defensive back, and they brought in a defensive end. And what I mean by that is it's a one-for-one defensive back, so why is that? It could very well be that the other defensive back they brought in, Jalen Kimber, could just be a guy that maybe is a replica of something they want to have against Baltimore to practice. Like, is he someone that, hey, this guy is, he's, you know, I don't know, like, for example, he's like Marlon Humphrey, so we're going to put him against the offense so they can get a better look because he's got the size and the build and plays like him. And when you do that, you got to get rid of somebody. And then maybe the next week you get Daquan Hardy back on the practice squad, right? It's just a numbers game that happens sometimes this time of year.
Right. Khalil Shakir, wheels up?
I think so. You could tell he wasn't 100% yesterday, but he's back on the field, and that's a good sign. They're not going to put him out there and put him in harm's way. So they obviously feel that he's good enough to at least go out there and start doing some things. You know, Khalil's a vet when it comes to answering questions because I said, you know, hey, you know, what do you think about being on track for week one? And these guys generally don't give you, like, any – they're not going to tell you yes or no because – but, of course, he's like, I'm just taking a day at a time, right? And we'll see where it goes from here. So I tried to get him there. He didn't work out. But he's a tough guy, and he is a guy that takes a lot of pride in, you know, being available and doing everything right to make sure that can happen. So he's been he said he learned a lot from last year's ankle injury. It's the same injury, ironically, happened against Baltimore. He missed the Baltimore game last year. Oh, no, I'm sorry, happened against Baltimore last year, and now they're playing Baltimore. So I think it's trending well for Khalil Shakir. We still have, you know, 10, 11 days here before the first game.
No, he wasn't forthcoming, and as you know as well as anyone, players and coaches often are not. But we did have Sean McDermott a couple of weeks back report that he was told he thought Shakir should be ready for the opener. And that was a little more than you might have expected him to say about that at the time. Once he said that, I felt, you know, I'm in there drafting. I feel like there's really no particular risk of Shakir missing time. But we will see. So what do you think of the new uniforms?
I like them. I've always liked, like, clean, slick kind of uniforms like that. I guess that's the word to use. I don't know. Clean uniforms, meaning, like, not really busy. Like, I've always kind of liked the Penn State uniforms when they wear all white or black and the blue and the white, I should say, and the white and the blue. But either way, you get my point. Like, it's just kind of the uniform. And when it's not too busy going on, it doesn't mean that I don't think you can have a really snazzy, you know, Oregon Ducks neon uniform. Okay, that can kind of look cool. But I've always been kind of a little old school with, yeah, that's just straight football, let's go uniform. It reminds me of that. It also reminds me a lot of the UB Bulls white uniforms. And I really like the UB Bulls white uniforms, to be quite honest. So I like that. The detail in it is pretty amazing. When you look at the buffalo on the shoulder and the raised buffalo there, and I know there's certain reasons why they did that. It's very cool. I think they kind of hit pretty cleanly. I think it represents a lot of what we're about here, Buffalo, right? It's the snow and the ice is what it's trying to replicate a little bit there. And you even have the condensation during the video coming off the shoulders and things like that. So I think not only, Mike, do I like the uniforms and think they fit and they're clean, I think they did a good job to present them actually on social media.
I was assuming that the Bills and the Patriots would wear their uniforms on the same night in week 5. Am I wrong? Somebody on Twitter told me the Patriots won't be wearing theirs that night. And every time I search for New England, I don't see a date.
Oh, the Patriots uniforms?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. So you asked when... Okay, first of all, let's straighten a couple things out so people know because I've gotten this a lot today. Only one team will wear a rivalry uniform in any game.
Okay, that's what I was wrong about. Okay.
Okay, so the Patriots are wearing theirs week 11 against the Jets.
There it is. Okay. Yep. The listener was right. I was wrong.
I tweeted out a graphic that someone had sent me, my friend Mike, who you know as well, by the way. He had sent me this, and so I tweeted it out as well. What's really interesting, though, is the Bills – in a game where a rivalry uniform is being worn, whether it's by the Bills or not, they only are one time. That's when they are wearing it against the Patriots on October 5th. However, like, the Jets are involved in three of these games. The Dolphins are wearing it against the Jets. The Patriots are wearing it against the Jets. And the Jets are wearing it against the Dolphins. And the Seahawks are involved in four of them. Every time the Seahawks go on the road for a division game, their opponent is wearing their rivalry uniforms. And then the Seahawks are wearing it themselves against the Rams.
Okay. I guess I, to be a stickler, would prefer that the Bills wear this uniform when it should be cold, because that's exactly what it's evoking, and likely it won't be on October 5th. I mean, the 50s is a normal October 5th.
Well, I think that the I guess you could have said Thursday night against the Dolphins would have been even sooner.
Yep.
But you kind of have to go by the schedule. The only other time would have been the Jets, and that game we know is going to be the throwback uniform that they're going to be wearing, the red helmet. What we know that.
Week 18.
That's the late game. So really, you only had two other choices, and both were September games. And obviously, it's a Sunday night game. It's national TV. It just resonates. It just hits, right? That's why you wear it. Why would the NFL also not have both teams wear these uniforms in the same game? Now, I don't know this, but my guess is, A, they want to highlight one team, highlight it, and show it off. Not like a color rush where it's both teams doing it. But the other part of it is, Mike, it could be because they just didn't want it to clash. Like, what if both teams have a white, you know, Nike rivalry uniform? And you're like, well, right. Wait a minute. We can't do that, you know?
Right. When I was assuming they would be together, I made a point about white helmets versus white helmets and Joe Ferguson. Yeah. But that was also wrong because the Patriots will have their silver helmets, their normal helmets for that game. I have long wanted one of these versions of throwback uniforms to go back to 1960 because I think it's a little known fact that the Bills started in blue and silver. For 2 years, maybe 1 year, I guess. 1960 was maybe it. Two at the most. I think one. And so they've never done that. And their throwbacks have looked very, relatively similar to their regular uniforms. So I was ready for this.
Yeah, I think that the Bills having a couple different uniforms this year that they're wearing just once is pretty cool. And I know that the fans kind of want them to wear these things more. The red helmets wear them more. It's also one of those things where you can oversaturate something, right? So what is the right amount of times to do these things? It's the rivalry uniforms one time, it's the red helmet one time, and the Standing Buffaloes twice this year. Now, the Standing Buffalo is going to be at home against the Bucks, but the Bucks are not wearing their creamsicles that day, just so everybody knows, here in Buffalo, November 16th. And the Standing Buffalo is going to be being worn Monday night at the Falcons, and the Falcons are doing their throwbacks and wearing their old, I guess it'd be red helmet.
Yes, which is really cool.
Yeah. Who do you think of when you see that red helmet?
John Settle, after today.
That's great. I love that.
No, William Andrews.
Ooh, Steve Bartkowski for me.
Same team. 1980. I was into them. Just finding my way as a sports fan. And, I liked a few teams. Atlanta was one of them. And that uniforms probably had more to do with that than I even knew. Right? I mean, this is sharp. Gray pants, red helmets, white jerseys. Works. Then they went to all black with Glanville and, No, no, thank you. All right. Is tomorrow a practice day or are we into the holiday weekend or what?
There's no media tomorrow that I am aware of.
Okay.
So they might be doing something as a team, but there's no media. Really, next week ramps that up. And I think there's some stuff in the CBA about how much time they need off and those kinds of things leading up because next week it'll be like a regular practice week and, we'll be out there and getting things going.
Practice Monday, off Tuesday, like that, next week.
That's actually to be determined because it is week one, Mike, but normally that is the case on a Sunday game, yes. Yep. So you're right to assume it that way, but because it is week one and the schedules are a little bit different with how they lead into it, it might be a little bit different next week.
Very good. Thanks for your time.
You got it.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. His appearances on WGR brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. Your place to buy a case, outlet liquor. What's your outlet? Talked about a lot of things, including Sal's draft. Forgive me. Not about games that you relive as a sports fan. Had a listener tweet at me about how, why is it always the case that there are losses? I don't know. Is it necessarily? Like, do you relive wins? Sure. In the context of Buffalo not having a major championship, though, the ones, this is just my nature, I guess, the ones that come to mind are the close losses, the heartbreaks. I've watched some of these famous Bills playoff wins maybe as often as anybody, going back, not the more recent ones, but back to the 90s at least. 803-0550 for your thoughts, the uniforms, games, good or bad, that you cannot stop reliving. This is Mike Shope on WGR. Welcome back. Thanks for listening. Lots to talk about. NFL season 1 week away. What's on your mind about it? 803-0550 to tell me. Mike Shope here. Bulldog is off today and tomorrow. Joe Ostrowski was unable to join today, but will be with us weekly on Thursdays starting next week. And Sam Panayotovich has been, as he's been with us throughout the entire year, will join me tomorrow. I haven't talked to Sam on this show in like a month, just a couple of Fridays off. He was sick. I was on his show with Joe this morning. Maybe you caught it. You can watch them on YouTube, and they also are doing, so it's 9 to noon Eastern. They've also been doing 10 to 11 on Twitter live, which I've been sort of getting in the habit of listening to their show through that. That's how you do it, right? I mean, it wasn't something I was always thinking about, but then I'm on Twitter and there's Joe or there's Sam, and now I started going to find it outside of that 1 hour. I was on at 11 today, just talking about the Bills season, some fantasy stuff. It's so funny to me. I mean, the fantasy thing has become an absolute obsession of mine, and not necessarily a healthy one. I spend a lot of money on it and a lot of my time that probably, okay, definitely could go into other interests and other responsibilities. But talking to those guys, they are just like blown away by the volume. And Joe said he's in one league. And Sam is in two, he said, but he'd like to be in only one. He's hoping one of his leagues folds. He was in three until recently, and one of the leagues folded, and he was happy about it. He's just like, enough. He mentioned something about people thinking it was rigged and just like it didn't sound good. So they're just, you know, here are two guys who are tops in their field as handicappers, if that's the right word, it might not be, but also like they're broadcasters. I mean, they're analysts about betting. Like, you can't put anything past them when it comes to that. They listen to Sam with us on Fridays. He knows all the different books or shops, as he'll call them, and he knows people at all these different places. He's got all kinds of different connections and tons of experience, all different sports, and he's just all over it. I watched their 11 o'clock hour today after I was off, and they're talking about Boise State, one of the Floridas tonight.
South Florida.
Thank you. South Florida tonight, and Nebraska versus Cincinnati at Arrowhead, which is not quite, by the way, right between those two locations. Not that it has to be. It is between them, but I've been to all places. Like, Lincoln is 3-4 hours from Kansas City. Who cares about this? And Cincinnati is like 8, maybe. Anyway, they're talking about these games and what the lines tell you and all the different aspects of it. And I can understand the language, but I'm nowhere close to being as on top of it. And their producer, whose name is Paul, kind of runs this one college football segment they were doing, talking about how he bet, maybe he said he bet this South Florida game like months ago. And wow, like, you know, I've done that for NFL games. I guess so. And then, I'm not at all criticizing them for this, just sort of interesting to me. Then Joe and Sam had a conversation on air about me and about fantasy. That's where they talked about how many leagues they were in and how few leagues they were in and everything else. And they're both like, how do you do it? And I was just texting with Sam about it. Like, look, it's no different than your thing. I mean, for you, it's more like your job. It is sort of half my job, but it's really the same thing. It's this, well, this is the excuse, I guess. The feeling that you have an edge because of what you know, how much you play, being able to predict other people in the room, just like poker, you know, like they're kind of all the same thing. And you're going to lose a lot. You know, there's a lot of luck, and the NFL is very unpredictable. Injuries. Just yesterday morning, I drafted with Pete Overzet on his stream in Best Ball Mania 6 underdog, Jaden Reed of the Packers. And he had been sidelined during camp, but Pete said he loves Jaden Reed. And I'm like, can one of these years Green Bay just sort of downshift and they're paying Jordan Love like he's great? You're drafting Matthew Golden in the first round. Reed's really good. Come on. They play conservatively, their defense has been good, so that helps that. But let's see it, Packers. You want to, you know, win it, or do you just want to be okay? Like, let's see it. So we're talking about Jaden Reed. Then later in the day, it came out that he was practicing. Like, oh, great timing. Took somewhat of a risk in the morning on a guy who wasn't known to be 100%. Now he's on the field. Bang. Today he's got a broken foot. Like, he wants to play through it. Nothing's really changed, I guess, but there's just more out there about him. He wants to play through this foot injury he's got. And no way would I have drafted him yesterday had I known this today. Like, just no way. That's life on the wire. That happens. And it's the same as betting. You know, it's just in a different form where you're betting on players and combinations and just different things. I told Sam, because I'm hoping to get in with them a little bit more often talking about this stuff, but they don't do a lot of fantasy on their show. I'm like, it's very much adjacent to prop bets. In fact, you know, if I have the time for this, and it's so many lineups that I usually just don't, but I should find the time for it, I will check. Like on a night game, I will. Every week, every night game I'll do this, at least. I'll check the prop lines and then plan lineups accordingly. Like, oh, well, I liked Stephon Diggs in this game, but maybe they have a corner I wasn't thinking about. Maybe it's going to be windy and I wasn't thinking about that. There might be more information. And if you go to his prop line and his receiving yards is like 54.5 yards or something like that, like, well, maybe it's not as good a play as I thought. So building a lineup is very much adjacent to just like betting the props. I'm like, Sam, it's really the same thing. You guys bet games. Here's a guy, and I don't really want to overspeak, but here's a guy who will not bet a game on FanDuel, say, because it's 3.5, but he will bet it on MGM at 4. Like, he's that far, that he's that knowledgeable and dedicated to it that he's going to have all kinds of different apps and just sort of really try to beat the game as best as one can. And I respect that. And fantasy is really kind of the same thing. So the props tell you something. All the drafting you're doing, all the bets you're making will tell you something. And you just sort of try to make it work, I guess. Not exactly the same topic, but I wanted to share this. I had a dream last night. Closer maybe to a nightmare than a dream. Most of my dreams these days are not like, well, rainbows and unicorns. You know, I'm falling out of a plane or something just like traumatic is happening to me. And I'm not somebody who just like sort of wakes up in a sweat or anything like that. Like, I'll just sort of wake up and reset. At least I can still do that. But this was more of a funny one. I was at a Bills game with my dog and my laptop. Why would you have your dog at a Bills game? I don't know. That's a dream for you. I don't know why Margot would have been at the game. Why would I have my laptop at a game? That I would often do because I'm going there to work and I'll always have my computer. So in this, doesn't matter. In this dream, I've got my laptop and I've got Margot. And they're two separate sort of traumatic events. The dog would be always running away and I'd have to get up and go find her. And I always did find her, at least. So at least it didn't end with just her being lost. So there was that. That's not the interesting part. Maybe this isn't either. The interesting part is somehow, like, I'm sitting here talking to you with my laptop in front of me, just like I would have been in this dream at a Bills game. And I'll call up this, I work off of a Microsoft Word document. That's what's up on my screen right now. And say I click in the dream, I click on the Microsoft Word document and the document shows up on the scoreboard. Basically, I had control of the scoreboard with my laptop and I am just like frantically trying to, I realize it and I'm frantically trying to like minimize every, I mean, I've got 50 tabs and like all the, here's Excel, here's my Spotify email, and I can't find the little line at the top right or the X. I can't see it. It's too small. So the trauma or whatever, the bad part is I cannot get my browser off the scoreboard at the stadium. And, you know, I don't want you to see that. I don't want you to see this. You're going to be reading whatever I'm writing for whatever my notes or whatever it is. Who knows? I couldn't tell you exactly what was on the screen, but thank goodness, perhaps. Yeah, so that was, I thought, kind of funny. My little laptop trauma. Being unable to rectify the situation, therefore forcing a packed house for a Bills game to look at my information on the scoreboard. That's what that was. Could have been worse. Yeah, could have been worse. Chris Trapasso will join me at 5. This is Mike Shope on WGR.